stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth here, and Greg Dolan is still with us, Senior Litigation Counsel at the New Civil Liberties Alliance, to talk about an amicus brief that Greg filed in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit this week, seeking a rehearing in the case of Consumers Research v. Consumer Product Safety Commission. So this is not one of NCLA's cases, but this is a case that we've taken a particular interest in because of the Humphreys executor issue in the case, which has to do with the fact that CPSC commissioners cannot be removed at will by the president. And under this 1935 case, Humphreys executor, if commissioners are wielding executive power, then the president has to be able to remove them at will. And this case was interesting, Greg, because the Fifth Circuit panel had a couple of notable conservatives on it, Don Willett and Edith Jones, and they split in terms of their views on whether or not to uphold the Consumer Product Safety Commission's structure. Judge Jones dissented and said that she thought that you could be faithful to Humphrey's executor and still say, look, it could be the case, or whatever the case was with the FTC in 1935. It's certainly the case that the CPSC is wielding executive power now. Therefore, even under the terms of Humphrey's executor, the president should be able to remove these commissioners at will. And if he can't, then that's unconstitutional. But Judge Willett upheld it and read, I think, Humphrey's executor a little more, I don't know whether you would say strictly or loosely, but read it to tie his hands at least and require upholding the agency. So how did NCLA come down on this, Greg? Where are we weighing in on this controversy?
So let me just begin by pointing out that Mark is right. This is not our case, but this isn't the first time we're making this argument, and we do have a case that is our case, the Tenth Circuit making substantially the same argument also against CPSC. So this is not something unusual or novel for us. We have a substantial interest in this case. But NCLA, perhaps not surprisingly to anyone who's not a first-time listener to this podcast, agrees with Judge Jones and I think Judge Jones—
Not because we always agree with Judge Jones, just 99% of the
right.
time.
And I think Judge Jones has a very good turn of phrase in her opinion, and she says, which I really liked, it's that facts are called facts for a reason, and just because— and, you know, as Mark, as you know, my other job is I teach law to students, and I try to tell them, like, yes, it is called law school, not fact school, but you have to the reason lawyers are paid big bucks is not because they can memorize various rules of law, but because they can apply law to fact. And I think Judge Jones is right that whatever the rule is when applied, or whatever the facts of FTC were in 1935, and there's some debate as to whether or not even back then they exercised executive power. But it's not disputed that their power increased since that decision, and they're doing vastly different things today. And these additional alphabet soup of agencies, including CPSC, are doing vastly different things today than they did in 1935. And so even assuming that Supreme Court got Humphrey's executor right, which is its own separate question, on the facts as they exist today, being fully faithful, you can't just be faithful to the part of Humphrey's that you like. Being fully faithful to Humphrey's would call for finding CPSC as currently structured unconstitutional.
Well, and the CPSC didn't exist in 1935. It wasn't founded until 35 or 40 years later, at least not as an independent agency. And so, you know, what we can't look at what it was doing in 1935. We can only really look at what it's been doing for the last 50 years or so. And certainly when I was there in 2009, the agency was engaged in all kinds of executive, what we think of executive power, ordering recalls of products, prosecuting people for selling products that had been recalled, those sorts of things. I mean, those are all executive kinds of power.
And again, facts are important. You can sort of think of more pedestrian situation where it may have been that in 1800s, riding your horse at 15 miles an hour was reckless because that's too fast. Today, nobody will think that driving your car 15 miles an hour is reckless. 90 may be reckless today, or in Virginia, anything over 80 is reckless, right? But it's not because the
law on the Beltway, apparently.
Apparently. But it's not because the law has changed. So the kind of the penalties for reckless behavior on the road may be the same. But facts, because we now have cars and not horses, matter. And so I think that Judge Jones is correct. I think she's also right. And going back to Don Willett, to Judge Willett is, if this were a TV show, people would see me doing scare air quotes. Yes, he did, uphold CPSC, but his opinion essentially says that, I do it because, somebody's holding a gun to my head. He basically telegraphs that Humphreys should be reconsidered, and he's at least right on that front. But he's a bit more reticent at reading it as narrowly as I think he should have. But
right, because that's the choice that the Court of Appeals has, right? They can either read the decision, read the precedent capaciously in a way that ties their hands, or they can distinguish it and narrow it and say it doesn't apply to this factual situation.
Right. They certainly can't ignore it, and I don't think we would ever encourage them to ignore it because that collapses the entire system.
Right.
Even if we think Supreme Court got it wrong, or even if they got it egregiously wrong, the lower court must follow it. They might criticize it in concurrent opinion, saying, "Look, I'm following the decision, but it's wrong for all these reasons." And that has been a practice. For example, in one of the most famous antitrust cases, Judge Posner writes an opinion saying, "I'm following the Supreme Court precedent, but here's all the economic science reasons why it's wrong." And then Supreme Court took the case and said, "Judge Posner, you're right. We were wrong before, but we get to decide when we are wrong." Following Supreme Court precedent doesn't actually mean ignoring the facts and ignoring the context in which that precedent arose. So we filed an amicus brief. It was a very short brief because this is not yet on what's called on the merits. This is just trying to convince the Fifth Circuit to rehear the case en banc with a full bench.
And just to be clear, the rules require us to write a very short brief. This wasn't us being lazy or something. You're not allowed very many words.
I think we're allowed at that stage about, I forget, either 18 or 1900 words, which is lawyers equivalent of clearing their throat. It's not a lot. But certainly if the court grants rehearing en banc, we expect to file a more full-throated, I don't know what to call it, defense of our position or a full-throated attack on Humphrey's executor. And explain why.
I like your extension of the metaphor
right,
there.
Right. It doesn't quite apply to the facts at hand. And hopefully the court does go en banc, render a decision as we believe it should be, which will then also inform our appeal in the Tenth Circuit, which is currently on hold.
Right, on hold because there's another case at the Tenth Circuit that raises the same set of issues. Right. And for some reason, the Tenth Circuit didn't want them to go forward on parallel tracks and wants to decide the other case first and then our case, which I'm not sure I endorse that practice. But anyway, that's what's happening in the 10th Circuit.
So that's kind of where we are. We'll see. But I think I'm encouraged by Judge Jones' dissent. And in some sense, although it didn't go our way, I'm kind of encouraged by Judge Willett's majority opinion because it does explain why Supreme Court should really ultimately take, whether this case or a similar one, and reconsider Humphrey's executor wholesale.
Well, do you have a prediction on whether the Fifth Circuit will rehear this case en banc?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, if it were ideological polar opposites coming to this conclusion, I would say, Judge Jones probably has more ideological compatriots on the Fifth Circuit than somebody who is more liberal. But this is too conservative, so I don't know. And honestly, it could be good either way, because if it goes en banc and kind of an essential limits Humphreys to its facts, that's a win.
The government probably won't accept that. Right, they'll probably appeal that.
Appeal that. But if it doesn't, or for example, if it doesn't and a number of judges vote not to go en banc, but write concurrent opinions saying that, look, we're not doing this, but Supreme Court, nudge, nudge, you ought to do it, that may also be good because it might speed up its path to the Supreme Court. So either way, I think, whether this case or the next one coming along, either way, I think Humphreys is due for reexamination and it's going to happen probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, I think I agree with you that there's probably not the sort of ideological divide, at least on the Fifth Circuit, on this issue. I think you could probably find a majority of judges there who would agree that Humphrey's executor was wrongly decided, for example. But I think there might be a difference of opinion tactically in terms of, well, does it make sense for us to sort of, I guess I would say, apply Humphrey's executor as it often gets applied and sort of rub the Supreme Court's nose in the fact that this is a bad precedent? Or does it make more sense, as you were suggesting, to narrow it and sort of force the agency's hand and make the agency want to appeal it to the Supreme Court? And you could, you know, I can see the arguments both ways as to which one of those makes sense. I'm not sure that's even a, you know, I said tactical, but I'm not even sure that the judges of the Fifth Circuit would be looking at it as a tactical question. I think they're just going to come down on different sides of whether they think it makes sense to read it narrowly or read it broadly, and then that'll have different implications. But either way, I think this case has a good shot of getting up to the Supreme Court.
I mean, one potential argument against our position and what judges might do is, if they agree with Judge Jones, which I think the law calls for, secondary question arises, what's the remedy? Is the remedy merely just severing the portion of the statute that says you can't be fired except for cause, but given no other remedy, is the remedy then invalidating everything they've done up until now because they weren't fireable for, other than for cause? And that creates additional sort of problems that they have to address, and they may not want to necessarily go into that.
They could just say, the particular thing you're challenging here is invalid.
That's another option. But they might still want to leave it to a Supreme Court that can address both of those issues at once, not just for CPSC, but for all of these quote-unquote independent agencies. My point is, like, tactically, I can see why it might go either way.
Yeah, I think that's right. Again, the case is Consumers Research by 2LP v. Consumer Product Safety Commission. A pending potential en banc review in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.